We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
One of the greatest songs of all time. Rich Girl by Hall & Oates. And if you want to know why we're playing this, why Jed Marshall is leading off with this. By the way, this is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and we're live in the Riley House studios. I asked Jed Marshall to play this because this was one of the two encore songs at last night's Hall & Oates show at Sprint Center. And my voice is still a little raspy from singing along because everybody at Sprint Center knew the words to every single song. It was like we all paid money to go sing with Hall & Oates is what happened last night at Sprint Center. Packed crowd. Train was the opening act. Train is not my bag, but they were good. I mean, if you're a Train fan, you probably really liked it. But Hall & Oates came out there and knocked out every single hit you wanted to hear, plus a couple of other obscure songs. But it was fantastic. Absolutely fan-damn-tastic. And I had to look up afterwards. I'm like, how old are these guys? Kind of like the Rolling Stones, if you ever go to a Rolling Stone. How are these guys? How old are these guys? Do they still rock? Johnny Oates is 80. Daryl Hall is, or 70, pardon me. Daryl Hall is probably somewhere around 70. But these two guys, both around 70 years old, came out and absolutely killed it for like 2 hours. The band was awesome. The band was a collection of, I would say, older guys. And they had a saxophone player that absolutely killed the whole arena. He came out there, this long, grayish-white hair, probably halfway down his back, and he was probably 65 or 70 years old. And they put him on center stage for several songs, and it was awesome. But Hall & Oates can still knock it out of the park. And if you know the story behind Rich Girl, and I only know this because I think I saw it on, VH1's Behind the Music, Rich Girl is actually written about a guy. Daryl Hall had been dating this girl, and she dumped him for a rich guy. And so he wrote a song about it, but he changed it to Rich Girl, so he wouldn't figure it out, which is hilarious. So anybody who was at Hall & Oates last night, I hope you enjoyed it. We don't get to see acts like this very often. This legendary that do these reunion tours occasionally. And if we did not have Sprint Center, Hall & Oates would not have come here. I guarantee you that. They would not have gone to Kemper Arena, which, before the remodeling that they're doing now, is an absolute dump. If we had not had Sprint Center, Power and Light, everything that Mayor Kay Barnes did for downtown, we wouldn't have people like Hall & Oates coming to Kansas City. So it was fantastic. And what I really liked is I saw so many people I knew, and I had so many random people come up and say hello who remembered me from being on Metro Sports Television and listened to the radio show. By the way, Jed, I'll give you a compliment. A kid came up to me afterwards. We stopped at the cigar box down the street, and I said, okay, we'll stop for one, but I got to work in the morning. I'm not staying out. And a kid actually stopped me, and he said, hey, Brad Porter, right? And I said, yes. He goes, always loved you on Metro Sports, but I got to tell you, the show that you guys do on Saturday and Sunday is awesome. People who work weekends, people who are out and about on the weekends really like the show. And I appreciated that. I thought I'd pass it along, so.
Yeah, that is cool. I don't know who that person was, but we appreciate you listening. And Brad, just real quick, you had mentioned, stopped for one. Your voice is telling a different story there. There's no way that you stopped for one.
Yeah, we stopped for one.
Yeah. All right.
But I was singing the whole night.
Oh, yeah, the singing. That's what it was. Not the 50 beers you drank at the concert.
Is this like a replay of Nate Buchady in Lake Tahoe when he was a little slow to the gas pedal the next morning?
Nate, in his defense, it was 4 a.m. in
Yes,
Tahoe.
It was. Yes.
So
I've done those kind of shows before. That hurts.
It's 9 a.m. here,
yes.
Buddy. I'll grab you some water at some point.
Yeah.
Get that hangover working.
I got some water here. But no, Hall & Oates was fantastic. Train was good for people who like Train. I'm not a big Train fan, but they were good. The one thing I have an issue with for people who go to concerts, and Jed goes to a lot of concerts, people who leave early before the encore. If you've ever been to a concert, you know there's an encore. They save one or two of the biggest hits. You know, they pretend to leave. Thank you, Kansas City. Ah, we're out of here. And the guys come up and pretend like they're going to clean off the stage. Whoa, wait a minute. We're going to come back. We liked you so much. We're going to do a couple of more, including Rich Girl. And then the second encore song, I don't remember what it was, but they did two of their biggest hits for the encore. People are leaving before the encore. People were leaving during the encore. And in my mind, there's a couple of issues I have with this. One, this is one of the greatest bands of all time. You came down here to see them sing some of the greatest songs of all time. And you're leaving. You're just going to leave. Got to beat traffic, right? No. We took a Lyft or an Uber, whatever it was, so we didn't have any hurry to get to our cars and beat traffic out of the parking lot, so maybe that we have a different story, but you're leaving before they play two of the biggest songs they've ever had. And then people are leaving during those songs. So that's the first part. But the second part is, these tickets cost a lot of money. Tickets to these big acts like Hall & Oates are not cheap. That's why I don't go to a lot of concerts. You pay that much money for the tickets and you're just going to leave? Okay. But anyway, it was a great show. It was a great concert. And so many nice people were there. And it was a two-hour sing-along. Everybody sang all the words to all the songs they ever knew. They're great songs. A couple of cheesy songs, I guess. But it's fantastic. So Hall & Oates, if you have a chance to go to a show in another city, or if they ever come back to Kansas City again, highly recommended. 5 stars, whatever rating you want to give. 2 thumbs up. Absolutely fantastic. And for the people at Sprint Center who continue to bring all of these terrific acts to Kansas City, thank you so much for all the hard work. All the people at AEG and all the people at Sprint Center who work down there. I know so many people, and Shanee Tate and so many other people down there. It's fantastic. The work you guys do to bring these shows to Kansas City and allow us to be entertained for a few hours is awesome. In addition to all of the college basketball, of course, and the college volleyball and all the other big events. But the concerts are just awesome. So kudos to all the people at Sprint Center. Thank you very much. All right, so that's my music review. Hall & Oates, fantastic. And now we'll get to sports, unless you want to talk Hall & Oates. Royals beat the Twins 6-5 last night, first game out of the box following the All-Star break. I guess these games don't really matter in terms of the results. 6-5, doesn't matter. We're watching the race with the Orioles to have the number one pick in the draft next year. So the results of the games, the outcomes of the games, I guess, don't really matter. But individual performances still do. Danny Duffy last night, fantastic. 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. 114 pitches, 67 strikes. Outstanding ratio balls to strikes. I did not know this, or I guess I didn't realize it. That was Danny Duffy's first win at Kauffman Stadium in 11 months. We almost went a year without seeing Danny Duffy get a win at home. Now, he's had winning performances at home. Don't get me wrong. He's had games in which he pitched very well at Kauffman Stadium and just didn't get the win. But that was his first win in 11 months. How about the stretch that Danny Duffy is on right now? I know we never bring up Danny Duffy's name in trade talks. He doesn't want to leave. I don't think the Royals want to trade him. But if you're looking at his numbers, if you're a contending team, Danny Duffy's a guy you have to ask about. You have to at least kick the tires on it. How about his last 11 starts? 5-2, 2.58 ERA. He went 16 consecutive innings without giving up a run until he gave up the one last night. That's pretty damn good. If you're a contending team, you have to call Dayton Moore and ask. Now, Danny Duffy's got a a few more years left on his contract, which makes it also attractive. Relatively reasonable price. But we know he doesn't want to leave. His hashtag, bury me a Royal. And I think the Royals have been more than loyal to Danny Duffy throughout his career for things that have happened. He walked away from baseball early on before he got to the major leagues. Got himself back together and came back. The Royals welcomed him back. He had the incident last year. Apologized. Accepted responsibility. The Royals welcomed him back. So we know the Royals are loyal to Danny Duffy. We know he does not want to leave. But if you're a contending team, don't you have to kick the tires? Don't you have to call Dayton Moore and ask about it? Again, last 11 starts, 5-2, 2.58 ERA. The other notable thing that happened last night is Lucas Duda. If you're talking about trade pieces, what can you get back for Lucas Duda? Probably not a lot. Probably lower tier single-A prospects who don't rank in the top 200 in Baseball America. You're not getting a lot back, but you can get something. Lucas Duda last night, home run, 3 RBIs. And the thing that I really liked about Lucas Duda and what he did last night, which the young hitters really need to watch, is he beat the radical shift twice last night. They tried the Twins tried two different radical shifts, including one in which they played four outfielders. Four! And he still beat it. Because the first time they put the shift on him, he turned the ball the other way and went down the left field line. So they're like, okay, well, if he's going to go the opposite way, we'll put four outfielders out there. We'll beat him that way. And he beat it again. Little pop-up, but he beat it. And then he knocked one over the wall. You're not going to beat that with any shift, obviously. But teams that are looking for a bat, guy who can play a little first base, Lucas Duda, stock is pretty decent right now. Again, not going to get a whole lot back. But I just thought that was interesting. I was listening to Les Norman earlier this morning on his show, and he was talking about beating the shift and whether or not Major League Baseball should set a rule against the shift. And Les Norman relayed the story that George Brett said that if they had shifted on him when he played, he'd have hit 400 because he could put it anywhere. And the younger hitters cannot do it. They cannot figure it out. Scott Boras came out and complained a couple of weeks ago about these shifts and how they're hurting his clients, most notably his left-handed batters like Bryce Harper. And it's not fair. Well, grow up, Scott. Your hitters need to figure it out. And Scott Boras' excuse is, well, the organizations aren't developing these players to hit the other way. Then talk to the organizations. If it's a developmental problem, talk to them. Also, tell your clients, grow up. Figure it out. Mike Moustakas had this problem a couple of years ago. Maybe 3 years ago now. Couldn't beat the shift. I watched him in spring training every day work with the hitting coaches to figure out how to beat the shift. Even if he had to lay down a bunt, which you don't want Moose to bunt because of his power, Mike Moustakas worked on it every day so he could beat the shift. Mike Moustakas figured it out. If Bryce Harper cannot do it, he needs to figure it out. He needs to grow up, swallow his pride, and figure out how to beat the shift. If that means more singles, if that means more doubles as opposed to the home runs, fine. Scott Boras doesn't like it because the power numbers will go down. Like I said, grow up. If you want to win, if you want to play, if you don't want Bryce Harper hitting .213 going into his free agent year, better figure out how to beat the shift. Not that that's going to hold down his contract offers, but it might. Does it come back below the $400 million that everybody's speculating on? Maybe. If I'm a team and I'm thinking about investing $400 million, maybe a little more hesitant to do that. We'll see. The other news note that came out is Adalberto Mondesi has left the team for family reasons. They didn't specify why, but he has left the team. At least he's on the family leave list that they have now. So we don't know what that's in relationship to. So we'll have to figure that out. British Open going on, or as it's called, the Open Championship. I love the British Open. I'm going to call it the British Open because that's what we call it over here. Okay?
I think it's just called the Open.
It's called the Open. The Open Championship, whatever it's called. We call it the British Open just so we can identify it easier as Americans. I'm not going to get away with calling it the Open Championship. So the Open. We call it the British Open so we as Americans understand where it is and where it's being played. And Tom Watson's won 5 of them, by the way. This is my favorite major. And it's probably not even close. Well, what about the Masters? Okay, yes, I like the Masters. What about the U.S. Open? The guys win it at +1 or even par. Okay, yes, U.S. Open is fantastic. PGA Championship is almost meaningless to me. I don't know where it's played. I don't really care for it. Whatever. If you've won a PGA Championship, congratulations. I'm sure it's a big deal. To me, the British Open is my favorite. It's played on, there's 13 courses it rotates through, 12 or 13, through Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland and England and all of that. I like it because, Tom Watson is the primary reason. But you look at the course, if you turned on the TV and you didn't know anything about golf, you would turn it on and say, wow, grass is kind of burnt. Yes, they had bad weather this year. They're having a drought. But that's generally the case. It doesn't look perfect. Yeah, they don't have a lot of trees. No, they don't. There's a lot of wind and there's a little rain sometimes. Yes! These are different challenges for golfers. This is Lynx golf. You have to figure out how to hit the ball and then wait for it to roll another 30 to 40 to 50 yards if the conditions are right. Sometimes it's not that far. You have to figure out how to pitch it onto a green and let it roll because it might roll for a while. These are challenges golfers don't face in any other tournament. When you go through your regular PGA schedule, yes, every course is different. But after a while, let's be honest, it starts to look alike. And I'm a golf fan, but after a while, some of it gets repetitive. This is very different. It's a big challenge, and I like it. It's unusual. And the pot bunkers? I mean, we get in a sand trap here, and we're like, oh, this stinks. You get in a pot bunker, and you're facing, an 8-foot-high wall in front of you of dirt? You have to figure out how to get it out? And I saw a guy slam it right into it, and it came right back at him today, instead of swallowing your pride and just knocking it out the opposite direction. I love it. It's a big challenge. And all the professionals this week have talked about how great the course is. Again, if you're not used to golf and you just turn it on, you'd say, that doesn't look very attractive. It's not supposed to. It's supposed to be a challenge. But it's my favorite golf tournament to watch. Plus, being kind of an insomniac, it comes on at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I know that you appreciate the fact that it's on early. And each person has their own golf course for which, whatever reason why they like it the best. I just always think it's interesting that your homerism comes out, Brad, and the reason is Tom Watson.
Yeah, I'm a homer for Tom Watson, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that. I just think that's interesting.
I did have to look it up. I'll be honest with you. I had to look up the courses at which Tom won his 5 British Opens, and Carnoustie's one of them, where they're playing this week.
Did he win? I bet he got one at Birkdale, Royal Birkdale.
I believe he did.
Probably a couple at St. Andrews.
This is why we're having Howard Richman on the show tomorrow.
Well, yeah, we are.
From the Golf Course Superintendents Association, who used to cover golf for the Kansas City Star. He'll know every course Tom won. Howard, if you're listening, brush up on the courses at which Tom Watson won his British Opens. By the way, Justin Rose tied the course record today at the Open. 64. Wonder if we'll see guys going low today. I'm kind of rooting. I like, there's a handful of golfers I really like. Tony Finau, I like. I think he seems like a good dude. And then he dislocated his ankle at the Masters at the par 3 tournament. Kisner, like Kevin Kisner. He's at the top of the leaderboard right now. I follow his caddy on Twitter, Kip Henley, who gives out a lot of golf tips, and then he'll hammer you. If you send him a video with your golf swing, he'll actually respond to you and hammer your golf swing. So I like Kisner a lot. Zach Johnson's near the top. He's an Iowa guy. I'll root for an Iowa guy any day. And he's won before. Pat Perez is an interesting dude. Tommy Fleetwood's got the wild hair. My son came downstairs the other day, and Tommy Fleetwood was on. And look, he's not the most popular golfer. A lot of people probably don't know him. He's got this really long hair, and he looks like he's in a rock band. So his name's Tommy Fleetwood. And my oldest son comes downstairs the other day, and he's on the screen. And he's on the screen right – well, he was just on the screen. Now Phil Mickelson's on the screen. But my oldest son came downstairs, and he goes, Fleetwood Mac is playing in the British Open? And I just looked at him, and I said, what? And he said, Fleetwood Mac, they're playing in the British Open. I said, no, that's Tommy Fleetwood. And it wouldn't be Fleetwood Mac. It would be Mick Fleetwood, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess. So you like the British Open, right?
I do. Yeah. The British Open is probably my second favorite major. So I go U.S. Open, British, Masters, and then I don't even know why the PGA Championship is a major. I mean, I get it, but I always considered the Players more of a bigger tournament. Yeah. I always think of that.
I love the Players Championship.
Yeah, the Players is great.
PGA is...
It's fine.
It's fine. Another major. It's a huge trophy.
I mean, I wouldn't turn down the check.
No. Not at all. By the way, Mike Tirico's fantastic on the coverage for NBC. That was a great move by NBC to steal him away from ESPN. Mike Tirico's the best at almost everything he does.
He certainly presents a very classy presence in the things he does on NBC at this point. If you read the ESPN book,
those guys
have all the fun. Yes. You might look at Mike Tirico in a less flattering light.
His personal life has been, he's had issues, absolutely.
But a lot of those guys at ESPN back in the day did. It seemed like a pretty fun place to work. It was a little bit tamer than Sports Radio 810 because everybody knows how crazy we are.
Right.
But still pretty fun.
ESPN was a frat house. It was Animal House, right? But Mike Tirico on golf coverage is fantastic. We're coming up on a timeout. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Crowntown Wiffle Weekend, which was out at the Urban Youth Academy at 18th and Vine. Got to say thanks to some people. And then we'll take your phone calls. We'll go ahead and open them up. We got open phone lines. For the next 30 minutes, 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. Jed Marshall is running the show today. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You're not a drinker. I can see it all in your leg, big fella. You wobbly, big fella. You finna fall. Sit down, you drunk, big fella. All night of the chicken, all night of the chicken, all night of the
Now, as I do traditionally on the weekend shows, I have to ask Jed Marshall, who is this?
This is Chance the Rapper.
How do I not know that? He's only the most popular guy in the world of music right now, right?
I'm not even a huge Chance the Rapper song.
This is good. I like this.
This is a pretty good song. I played this more because, Brad, you had mentioned that you were at a concert last night. Yeah. You mentioned how rowdy you got having the one beer, so I thought it was funny with the I've been drinking all night. So that's the onus of this bump.
I like it. I like when you put thought into the bump back music.
Turns out I do have a little bit of creativity. It's masked by all of, you know, my talking, but I do my best.
By the way, that is the voice of Jed Marshall, who's running the show today. My name is Brad Porter. Just happy to be here. It is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're live in the Rally House studios. Phone lines are open, 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. If you're out and about today, I know people got kids' ball games and still travel season if you're heading out of town. A lot of people taking vacation time. We were kicking around the British Open, and I was kind of going through some of the headlines on ESPN.com. And there was a lot of talk on Twitter last night about Michael Beasley possibly signing a one-year deal with the Lakers. Because I guess Beasley goes back to the Miami Heat days with LeBron, and LeBron kind of likes him. And Beasley's had a... Yeah. Beasley has had a an rather unremarkable NBA career for a guy who was, what, number two overall drafted? I would say unremarkable. At one time, he was over in China because he couldn't get a job here. He seems like a rather strange dude. I don't know what he's like in the locker room. But somebody made a joke on Twitter last night. The Lakers, based on who they've signed since they got LeBron, it's kind of like if you had $15 and spent $14.50 on LeBron and 50 cents is what you got left, and these are the guys you're picking up.
You don't think Be Easy is the answer?
I don't think you're going to the championship with Michael Beasley.
Rob Perez, who people might know better as Worldwide Wob on Twitter, yeah, a very good follow for NBA junkies like myself, was on with Cody Tapp last night, and he changes, so not his handle on Twitter, but he changes, like, you know how you can change your name.
The name that comes before, yeah.
And he always has, it's always like, Wob something, but now he's meme team, and he was mentioning last night on the air with Cody about how the Lakers are literally becoming the team of memes, so that's the onus now,
right.
But talking about the absurdity of signing Lance Stephenson, and now Michael Beasley,
Rajon Rondo,
and then having the chaos with Lonzo and LaVar Ball, that whole drama,
right.
And then actually having like a reasonable player in Kuzma and not getting rid of Brandon Ingram. It's just going to be a wild season in L.A. And Rob's contention was that he doesn't think, well, I shouldn't put words in his mouth. He's very leery of the Lakers even making the 8 seed.
I would be. Absolutely, I would be.
Yeah, in a very competitive West.
I could see them missing out. Easily.
Now, I feel like they'd still get to the 8 seed.
Now, if you're a game and a half back with 6 to play and you've got LeBron,
you're in a good position.
You're in a good spot. That's going to be such a circus. I feel bad for Kuzma because he was drafted after Lonzo Ball. But Lonzo Ball gets all the attention, and Kuzma is actually the better player. Lakers got tricked into drafting Lonzo Ball that high. Just my opinion. I could ask Jarrett Sutton, who actually scouts for the NBA. I think the Lakers got conned into drafting Lonzo Ball that high. Well, he plays at UCLA. He's got a brand. And if you actually scouted him, his mechanics are just awful. And Kuzma's the better player. Absolutely. We'll take a phone call here. If you want to jump in, 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. In a couple of minutes, we're going to hear from Ned Yost and Danny Duffy about last night's Royals win. Let's go to MW on line two. MW, you're on Sports Saturday. What's up, MW?
Well, thanks for talking to me here, Brett. You know, you've been talking about some of my all-time favorite subjects as far as entertainment and stuff is concerned. I just love Hall & Oates. I think, well, I'm a big British Invasion fan and really, really, really like the, you know, Beatles and Stones and Fleetwood Mac and... You know, all those groups from way back, and speaking of Mick Fleetwood certainly hired an awful lot of great lead singers. I mean, he's got half a dozen, like, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame lead singers in that band. I like them. And the whole Tommy Watson story, man, when he was...
Hey, MW?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you this. The Royals win last night. Do you care about wins and losses for the rest of the year, or just individual performances?
Well, I'd like to get a couple of good draft choices and start stocking for about 1923 for us to start coming back again. But
yeah, absolutely. Hey, MW, I thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Have a good Saturday, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, I thought I was going to talk to you about a little bit more stuff, but that's neither here nor there. Good talking to you.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Appreciate it, MW. MW is a great caller. He used to call him when I used to intern for Don Fortune like 20-something years ago.
He worked with Todd Lebo at a Royal Stadium.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think he worked for the post office, too. I'm trying to go through my Rolodex memory. Yeah. Kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. We'll go back. He was referencing Hall & Oates because that's what I talked about in the open of the show, because I went to the Hall & Oates show last night. So I'll stick with the Royals because that's where we left off with MW 6-5. And again, the results don't really matter. It's the wins and losses don't matter. The individual results or performances are what matter. So the Royals went 6-5 last night. Let's hear from manager Ned Yost after the victory, after the All-Star break.
Ned, Danny Duffy's been on such a roll the last three games, but tonight to get those strikeouts you know, kind of at the end of his night with Mauer and Rosario. That had the big,
for the they end. Were big. You know, I didn't. We took him to 114 pitches his last start before the All-Star break, and I told Cal, I'm not doing it again. I'm not taking him to 114 pitches. But against Mauer and Rosario, I just felt like he was our best matchup right there. And of course, he came up big for us in that situation and ended up striking them both out and got exactly to 114 pitches, but just pitched a great game.
Lucas Due did the same thing, 3 hits tonight, ever since he's, you know, come back from rehab, and 7 hits his last 6 games, but he's seen the ball real well.
He's seen the ball well, and, you know, they're doing the unique shift on him where they get a strike, and then they get the 4-man outfield, and, you know, doing a really good job the first 2 times of, you know, staying inside the ball and, you know, getting base hits. And the first one was, you know, a little perfectly placed pop-up, 2 RBIs, you know, to give us a 2-run lead, and then kind of a ball that even if they weren't shifting, was going to be a base hit into kind of left center field there. We didn't hit it hard, but the 3rd one, he walloped. I mean, that was a blast into the right field seats.
Twins made it interesting in the end. Peralta's been so good all year, just 1 earned run coming in the night. That the layoff maybe, 14 for him and 11 days for Mount.
The layoff definitely was a little bit rusty for Willie. You know, had good stuff, just command was off just a hair. You know, a couple of real close borderline pitches that could have went either way. We didn't get them. And, you know, he'll be ready to go again tomorrow. Very nice job, first night.
You just got up and walked away from
he
it.
He did.
Dad, you talked a lot about Danny committing to his fastball. His changeup and curveball, too, lately have just been –
really good.
Man.
Yeah, he's been commanding 3 pitches. I mean, 3 outstanding pitches. He's really got the feel for the curveball, which is a big pitch. And more importantly, you know, he's got the feel for the curveball down in the dirt, down in the zone with 2 strikes, which is key. That's a hard pitch to throw at times. We struggle to throw that pitch, and it's a very, very important pitch. But he's been commanding his secondary stuff really well.
Obviously a big double from Salvin there.
Huge double right there.
But last 2 at-bats, seen some good things from him.
Yeah, I mean, he was really frustrated after his first at-bat, and he was, you know, letting himself have it pretty good on the bench. And then the last 2 at-bats, I mean, I was really smelling something. The line drive out, I'm thinking, man, he's going to get a hold of one here and drive it in the seats. And just didn't get under it enough, and then the double was huge. So 2 runs ended up big for us.
Going through your mind in the top of the ninth, or just
nothing I could do about it. You know, I just hoping that we could not let the tying run get to the plate. You know, and it did, and the tying run got on base. And you know, once Willie got to 35 pitches, I'm like, you know, that's a lot of pitches to throw. You make a mistake here, especially against Grossman. He hits it out of the park. You know, let's bring in the fresh arm. You know, I debated between Mauer and McCarthy, but I got McCarthy hot, you know, an inning and a half before that, and didn't really want to get him up again. Mauer came in and got the job done.
So Royals manager Ned Yost after the 6-5 win over the Twins last night. The interesting quote there is Danny Duffy had gone 7 innings and given up 1 run. 7 innings, gave up 1 run. And it was 6-5, the final score. And Ned Yost was asked about that 9th inning where Willie Peralta was, the wheels were coming off. Brandon Mauer came in and was struggling.
Again, always a bad decision.
Always a bad decision. And Ned Yost says, there was nothing I could do about it. That's kind of the season in a nutshell, isn't it? There's nothing I can do about it. These are the guys I have. I can't just sit. These 3 guys were ineffective. They're on the roster. They have to play sometime, right?
And I think that's more what I took away from it. At face value, you and I both were laughing when you hear the audio.
I was.
But the point that Ned Yost is trying to make is that these, regardless of the situation we're in, these guys are major leaguers, for better or for worse.
Right.
They need to go out and show that they can do that, whether it be whatever role. And, you know, sometimes you're going to dump in your diapers, but sometimes if you want to stay in the game, you got to figure it out.
If I've got a guy with an ERA of 12... can't just make him disappear.
You can. The Royals aren't in a position where they can.
Right. But if he's on your 25-man roster, he's going to have to play at some point. You can't have a bullpen with the same two or three guys every night. That's just not going to happen. It's not. Man, I'm never going to feel sorry for Ned Yost. He's made millions of dollars as a manager and a ton as a player over his career. He's won two American League championships and a World Series. Not going to feel sorry for him. But I know how I get how he feels. There's not a lot I can do. We got guys. They got to play. I can't run out the same two or three guys out of the bullpen every night. Sooner or later, these guys have to play. And if they fail, it's on them. You know, the manager gets criticized. Why didn't you put in, say, Kelvin Herrera was still here. Why didn't you put in Herrera there? Well, because I thought the other move was going to work. If I thought it was going to fail, I wouldn't do it. This is the thing. Seren talks about this all the time. When you managers are open for criticism, okay? They make bad decisions sometimes. But they never sit there in the dugout with the thought of, well, this is going to fail, but I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Maybe Pete Rose.
Okay, that's a good one. First, he said he'd never bet on baseball. Then he said,
"I mean, we don't need to open that can of worms."
Yeah,
that
no.
was more just
no,
a
I'm
ha-ha.
Not, that's the weekend talk show trap you fall into. No, we're not getting into that. But I just thought it was funny. Well, no, I never bet on baseball. I bet on horse racing or whatever. Then it was okay. I bet on baseball, but I never bet on the Reds. Then it was well, I always bet on my team to win, or I don't know what it was. Anyway. So the manager never sits there, talks to his bench coach. Well, you know what? If I put Maurer in here, he's probably going to totally wet the bed, but I'm going to do it. No. And maybe they don't always believe that they're going to go out there and be nails, but they have an idea. This guy's in the major leagues for a reason. He ought to be able to get major league batters out. And the Royals bullpen darn near blew it again last night. Story of the season. What else can I do? There was nothing I could do. That's the quote. Just to hang it up. Just print it out. That 2018 Kansas City Royals. What else could I could do? Or there was nothing I could do. Should we get a t-shirt? The guy on Twitter, Smug Dingus. I'm sure you maybe follow him.
I know. I'm aware of him.
He designed Cody Tapp shirt.
He did.
Right,
and he did a great job.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I got one. Cody, thank you very much. Got one for me last week. We could get Smug Dingus to design a t-shirt that says... There was nothing I could do.
Or if Conrad McGorgan is out there, I'm sure
yes!
he could come up with something clever
Some
on Photoshop.
Photoshop, yeah. 2018 Kansas City Royals, there was nothing I could do. That's all you need to know. Danny Duffy, we have comments from Danny Duffy after his performance last night. I read a lot of stats. I read a lot of stories. But it actually surprised me when I read last night that this was Danny Duffy's first win in Kauffman Stadium in 11 months. Almost a full calendar year between wins at Kauffman Stadium. Because you remember a couple of years ago, especially during the playoff runs, people would tweet out, Duffy night. Can't wait. It's another Duffy night at the K. He hasn't won at the K in 11 months. Scratch that off. Here's Danny Duffy after the win last night over the Twins.
I knew that I was coming out after that inning, and you know my job was to really bear down on those two lefties. And you know, we were able to make some good pitches, so big situation in that point in the game, and, you know, I was really happy to get through it.
How was it tonight, just commanding all three pitches?
Yeah, I mean, there was times, obviously, where I'd struggle with my command and my curveball slipping out of my hand, my fastball, I was just getting around it, but for the most part, you know, when we really, really had to, we made some good pitches.
Feels good to get a home win.
Yeah, it does, finally, huh? Yeah. It's been a long time. You know, these fans deserve, you know, the best, and you try to do your absolute best, if not more, than when you're home, and it's nice to get one at home.
Can you take us through that fourth inning when you loaded the bases there?
Yeah, I walked the first guy, seven pitches, and I thought the last pitch was close, but it was off, and, change up to Grossman. Just left it out over a little bit. He didn't get it. He didn't hit it hard, but, you know, was able to fall. You know, walking the next guy didn't obviously help, and we were able to lock the fastball command back in with Kepler, and I thought Polanco might have got that one too, so, I just bared down and tried to get through it, and You know, and it's funny too because, you know, as I'm talking, I remember every time I'm like really struggling, I remember every pitch. And some of the times where you make good pitches, they just kind of float through, you just float by. And that was a big inning for us. And I was really fortunate, for one, to get out of that, you know, with just the one run.
Not to get like too revisionist, but earlier in the season, would that have been an inning you would have really struggled to mentally get through?
No, I don't think that I'm at a point in my career anymore where if there's adversity in a game, I'm really going to struggle to get through mentally. It just wasn't in the cards for me, you know, and that'll happen again, you know, and again, hopefully I play long enough to where it happens multiple times. It sounds stupid, but if you're here, you're going to have moments like that. You're going to have times where it's just not falling your way. You know, what you got to do is just power through it and try to keep being yourself until something changes and you fix it.
Were you already in the clubhouse in the 8th and 9th?
Was that?
Were you already in the clubhouse when the 8th and 9th innings were unfolding?
I was up here in the bottom of the 8th, so, yeah.
What was going through your mind when you were seeing
it? We had it the whole way, man. We're good. I got confidence in our guys, and Willie made a couple really good pitches. The 3-2 was very close. I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, the box or whatever, you know, people rely on nowadays. But it was, you know, it might have been off, but Willie wasn't missing by a heck of a lot. So, you know, he battled, and Maurer did a great job of coming in and doing his thing. So this was a big win for us. We're really pleased.
Danny Duffy watching the near meltdown by the bullpen from the clubhouse said, "I knew we had it. It was in the bag. I had confidence in my guys." I like that. He's a good teammate. Steps up for you. Absolutely. I did like him saying when he was asked about getting the bases loaded and getting out of that jam. He was asked about that situation. He said, "Look, I've had struggles before, and when you get it when you were younger or when he was younger, you would get like, oh my gosh, what's happening? I loaded the bases. I'm in trouble here." And now he kind of has the thought of, okay, let's work through this. If something bad happens, it'll happen, or I'll get out of it. And it's a much more baseball, even keel kind of thought process, which you have to do over the course of a 162-game season. So there's Danny Duffy after the win last night. Royals get the victory 6-5, start off the post-All-Star break, half of the season with a victory. We have not talked Chiefs yet. We are going to do that in the 10 o'clock hour. Brooke Pryor, one of the new beat writers for the Kansas City Star, who covers the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to cover it. So I wanted to kind of hold our Chiefs stuff to talk to Brooke about that. And Mahomes-a-Palooza, I guess, is going to start this weekend. Tomorrow, Stephen St. John is on his way up there to stay at the Stony Creek Inn. Man, I was listening to him on the Border Patrol this week. I think he wanted to go last week and just be there a week early and just wait. Like, stand outside like John Cusack in the movie holding the boombox over his head, say anything. I think he wants to be there for Pat Mahomes' arrival with the boombox and in playing In Your Eyes.
Steven was having a meltdown yesterday at the end of the show.
I did hear that, yeah.
I hope he's all right. I hope he makes it to Sunday.
Yes. I don't know anybody more excited for Chiefs training camp than Stephen St. John. That's it. That's number one. He's already there. He's already there, or he's on his way.
I have plenty of ha-has, okay. But probably not suitable for radio.
Okay. Gotcha. So Brooke Pryor from the Kansas City Star is going to join us here in about 10 minutes. Then at 11 o'clock, Ben Kirchable, CBSSports.com, is going to join us. Ben was with us a couple of weeks ago, and he's a very interesting guy. And he's a great storyteller. And it took like 10 minutes just to get to talking college football because we were just kicking around some stuff. So if you go to CBSSports.com, please read Ben Kirchival and follow him on Twitter. Great, great stuff. He's a funny guy. He's a good dude. So we'll talk Chiefs. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back, and we'll have one more segment before the top of the hour and then two more to go. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Saturday. We're live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's that Saturday vibe. Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. By the way, when is the Marley concert?
Ziggy is coming.
Ziggy Marley. You're going to Ziggy Marley, right?
I am. I think it's the 25th.
Okay.
It's a Saturday of August.
Okay, so you got a month.
Yep.
Yeah, all right.
I think it's always funny when you talk about how this is Saturday vibes or whatever you say. This is everyday vibes.
Okay, yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
It just, it's kind of a weekend flow, though, but I know it's an everyday thing for you.
Love the Bob Marley.
This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Blasting out 50,000 watts. Also get it on your app. If you're out and about for a walk, you can get that at 810WHB.com. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House studios. A couple of minutes left before we get to hour number two, in which we are happy to bring in Brooke Pryor, one of the new Chiefs beat writers for the Kansas City Star. We'll get to find out about her and her days of working at the Oklahoman and covering University of Oklahoma football. So we can kick around. We can do both college football and Chiefs football, but Chiefs is priority number one. Chiefs training camp opens up tomorrow, not for the public, but quarterbacks and rookies are going to be there tomorrow. Stephen St. John is going to be there tomorrow because he cannot wait. He'll be standing outside Patrick Mahomes' dorm room with the boombox over his head, playing In Your Eyes. All John
so
Cusack.
Creepy.
He's going to wear a trench coat. And
if he's wearing a trench coat, let's hope he has more clothing on. My concern would be what Anthony Sherman is wearing.
Oh, I can't not wait. Did he wear... He wore the jorts overalls with no shirt one year, right?
Mm-hmm. And he rocks a fake mullet and stuff like that. He always is very pro-American.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's always
very
fun to
Ricky
see.
Stanzi.
Captain America. Ricky Stanzi. Great. That brightened my Saturday.
His name still pops up randomly once in a while. Like, Giants bringing Ricky Stanzi for a workout. And I'm like, he's still around? I'll never forget.
No, he's not.
I'll never forget. Bob Gretz asked him if he had taken a summer vacation or something about going to Spain or something. He's like, I don't need to go anywhere. I'm in America. America's all I need. I'm not sure he did a lot of history and geography study in college. Anyway, hour number two coming up. Brooke Pryor from the Kansas City Star talking Kansas City Chiefs and Chiefs training camp. You're listening to Sports Saturday. Jed Marshall is here. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House studios on Sports Radio 810. WHB. While I'm waiting.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.